Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. It is Friday, December 10th. I am your co-host, Joanne Chang. Here in the studio with me are my co-hosts, Carissa Thorpe and Allison Cole.
Hello.
And Allison is doing the controls, too.
Yay, I passed my test.
I know. She's officially our technician plus co-host. Today's show, we'll be learning all about the leather industry. In the first half of the show, we'll be playing an interview I recorded in New York City last week with Erica Kabursky, co-owner of Moose Shoes Vegan Shoe Store. And in the second half of the show, we'll be speaking with Becky Ginden-Clark, the Director of Research and Information from Liberation BC, about a recent information page she put together on the leather industry. And before we continue, I just want to say to you guys, I wasn't here. I was in New York last week, and in my absence, I heard the show, and I just thought it was such a well-put-together show.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, like, when I'm working on the show, I don't really pay attention like that because I'm all worried about, you know, making mistakes or timing.
Mm-hmm. I felt the same way when I was away in September, and I heard the show. I was like, and I told you, that was such a good show.
Yeah, it just sounds so professional. I'm like, wow, this is like, you know.
Except I played the wrong song at the end, but I'm sure no one noticed.
Right.
That was the only fault.
Yeah. And before we continue with the show, I think Allison has something to share with us.
Yeah, if you were listening to the show last week, you'll know that we interviewed the author of the recently released vegan cookbook called Quick and Easy Vegan Celebrations. This is Alicia C. Simpson's second cookbook now, and her first one, themed in a similar vein, is called Quick and Easy Vegan Comfort Food. Speaking with Alicia last week was such a pleasure, in part because I had just finished reading through the whole book, and as I said on the show prior to the interview, I felt that now I really knew her, even though I had never spoken to her before. So I have to say that this cookbook really conveyed the essence of her cooking style, her demeanor and passion for good food, and the fun-loving company and the fun-loving personality of a vegan who loves to cook for people and put on a good party, which is very fitting as this is a book about cooking for celebrations. The book is divided into sections by type of celebration, and you will find a myriad of different kinds of celebrations and holidays here with recipes for each, starting at New Year's Eve and moving on to such notable holidays as Valentine's Day, St. Patrick's Day, Easter, and Halloween. The winter holidays are also there as well, Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Christmas, and Kwanzaa. And you'll also find lesser-known holidays, at least here in Canada, I should qualify, such as Mardi Gras and Cinco de Mayo. Regardless of which holidays you do and don't celebrate, well, this book will give you a reason now to officially recognize all these holidays with some tasty homemade food. I really liked how the recipe part of the book is prefaced with some planning and organizing tips, especially the section where Alicia lists through and describes many of the common ingredients she uses in her recipes that may not be so common for the novice cook. She explains to you exactly what they are, how they work, and where you can purchase them, and to give you the knowledge that you need to embark on some newfound goodies. She talks about agave nectar, coconut milk, energy egg replacer, kelp granules, nutritional yeast, panko breadcrumbs, xanthan gum, and more. For those who haven't heard of or used some of these ingredients before, I think that this section will dispel any predisposed fears or apprehensions of what may be unusual foods to you, and that you'll just be more encouraged to jump right out to the grocery store and get ready to cook. The enthusiasm parlayed through this book by Alicia is ecstatic. For someone like me who hasn't cooked for quite some time now, although loves doing so, after reading this book, I was totally pumped to try out a bunch of recipes all at once, which unfortunately I haven't had time to do yet, although I did make a couple of the recipes in the last few days. Seriously, I think anyone who is interested in making good food for themselves and others would love this book, if only just from reading it. But that's not to say to not try out the recipes. So let's get to the recipe part now, shall we? If you remember from last week, I asked Alicia what some of her favorite recipes were from the book, and she had a hard time to pin some down, as she described them all to be as her babies, and like all parents, you love them all equally, right? As a sampling, though, of what you can expect, there's aloo samosas with tamarind chutney for New Year's Eve, French onion burgers for the game day spread, shepherd's pie for St. Patrick's Day, turkey cutlets for Thanksgiving, pecan fudge for Christmas, and African peanut soup for Kwanzaa. And that's just a small sampling. The recipes that I happened to make were the red velvet cupcakes for Valentine's Day and the sweet potato and parsnip latkes for Hanukkah. Although I also bought the ingredients to also make the coconut curry peanut noodles, the red lentil stew, the hazelnut crusted seitan, which is a Christmas recipe, and the challah bread, which is a traditionally non-vegan Hanukkah bread.
I'm eating the cupcakes right now.
No, you're not. We're in the studio.
Oh, no, I'm not.
You were eating
cupcakes. I was earlier.
Yeah. But as for my cupcakes and latkes, well, I brought you some cupcakes today. What did you each think of them?
They were moist, tender.
Tender? It's an odd qualifier for a cupcake, but okay, I'll take that.
They were tender in our hearts.
In our hearts, that's right. And the icing was just delicious out of this
world.
It is
delicious, and it looks delicious, and I like the sprinkles on top.
Oh,
you don't really
you.
See that well, on that vegan was, stuff all that often, yeah. I don't feel.
Okay. Well, I had two of these last night, and actually one this morning for breakfast, and... And now I know that I must give the rest away because they are quite addictive, not to mention quite rich. These cupcakes sport a beautiful red coloring that I have never done with a cake recipe before, and I really like the consistency of the cake batter, which was so fluffy, and I think this is what makes them so moist and yummy. Some special ingredients that you'll find in these cupcakes that you probably won't find in traditional egg-laden cupcakes are non-dairy milk. I use soy milk shortening, which I'm not commonly seen in cupcakes, I don't think. Applesauce and vinegar. Of course, there's the delectable cream cheese frosting as well, and that's cheese spelt in a typically veganized fashion, C-H-E-E-Z-E, which uses soy cream cheese, non-dairy margarine, I used Becel, and lots of icing sugar. Very moist, very yummy, although not so quick as the book's title designates. These cupcakes took me about 2.5 hours to make in total, but I have to say that this is the standard amount of time that it would take to make 2 dozen of any cupcakes. You know, it does take a long time to frost.
Yeah.
And decorate, too. Yeah, the little decorations on top were my own addition.
Which is why you should have a cupcake party.
Okay. Sounds good. I don't know what
to
one is.
Well, yeah, then everybody would decorate together.
Yeah. I like getting help for making my cookies at Christmas, too, for the frosting. Anyways, the sweet potato latkes and parsnip latkes were very easy and fairly quick to make and crispy and tasty with their non-typical latke flavor of the sweet from the sweet potato combined with the savory from the potatoes, onions, and parsnips. But that's all I'll say about that in the interest of time. I do recommend that you purchase this book, Quick and Easy Vegan Celebrations by Alicia C. Simpson. There are just too many yummy-looking recipes in this book to not want to drool over and over the holidays, and I know that I will certainly be making more of the food here in the near future. With that said, we announced last week that we are doing a draw for this book, and a bunch of people did enter the draw on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and they told us which holidays they most enjoyed cooking for. It was fun to read how passionate other people are to make good, great vegan food for our holiday celebrations. And whoever does win this book is going to really appreciate it, I think. So without further ado, we're going to do the draw. Maybe I can have a drum roll, please. And whoever is calling us, we can't really answer the phone right now. So thanks. That sounds awesome. Okay, so the winner is... Sharon McAllister Creelman.
Woo-hoo,
congratulations, Sharon.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so...
She'll be cooking away this holiday season.
Sharon said on Facebook, I suppose my favorite holiday to prepare a vegan feast would be Christmas, with Thanksgiving being a close second. Not everyone in my extended family is vegan, so it provides the perfect opportunity to create some real kick-A-star-star vegan dishes to make a point. A cruelty-free diet is not just healthy and tastes great, but nobody had to die for it either. Being vegan doesn't mean you have to go hungry. Congratulations, Sharon. I'll be in touch with you very soon on how you can claim your book.
Great. Thanks for that, Allison. You're listening to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. Last week, while I was vacationing in New York City, I caught up with sisters and co-owners Erica and Sarah of Moo Shoes, the pioneer vegan shoe store in North America. So I'm taking the opportunity to do an entire show on leather. Because generally, I don't think there's a whole lot of awareness about leather, and when you start to transition to a more compassionate lifestyle, you start to become more aware of it. And, you know, it becomes kind of frustrating because you just seem to find it on everything, and sometimes it seems so hard to avoid it. I guess the example I have is one time I bought a pair of shoes made entirely of canvas, but when I brought it home, I found that the logo is printed on a tiny piece of leather. Has something like that ever happened to you guys?
Well, nothing that I can think of right now, but I know I bought a dress once that had like a crisscross in the front that you have to do up, right, like with a string or whatever, and I never noticed until long after when I became more aware of these issues. It's leather, and it kept breaking, too, and then I was like, well, no wonder. It's skin, you know?
Yeah,
right.
It's made out of leather. It totally doesn't need to be.
Right. And when you're shopping for a dress, you're not thinking about leather.
Especially on a dress.
You wouldn't think that the cross string, I don't know what it's called. It's like a sort of like, when you do up a corset, like that kind of thing in the front. Yeah. You wouldn't think that string is made out of leather.
Exactly. Yeah. And Carissa mentioned something about jeans.
Definitely on the back of jeans. I try to, even at like thrift stores, I try to avoid the ones that have... like just the leather as like their logo on the back of the jeans. I don't understand.
Right. And you're like, you're not thinking about
Levi
leather.
Jeans.
Yeah,
right? Probably most jeans.
They have a patch of leather on the back. So, you know, one of my most recent discoveries of hidden leather just blew me away. Do you guys know what stacked heels are on shoes?
Yes, I do.
I
did a little bit of research this morning.
You did. Well, these are
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, these are heels made of stacks of materials, so you can see the layers going up the whole height of the heel. So most of the time you look at them, they look like wood, just like, you know, layers of, thin layers of wood on the heel. But that's because some of them are made of stacked wood. But the surprising thing is sometimes these heels are made of stacked leather. So when you put the wooden one next to the leather one, they actually look exactly the same.
So how are you supposed to tell? Is that
you
the point?
You can't tell.
And you would never guess. And I was totally surprised to learn about that.
I've seen those heels all the time and just always assume that they're wood. And that's a real concern for vegans because most shoes have labels for the upper, the lining, and the sole, but no shoes ever have labeling telling you what the heel is made of. Yeah. So this is why it's so important to have vegan businesses like Moo Shoes in New York, where you can just go and purchase your shoes without having to worry about these things. Have either of you been to Moo Shoes? Speaking of Moo Shoes, if you ever go to New York, you have to go to Moo Shoes.
I saw it on What Not to Wear and was like, I wish that was me.
It's an urban, hip, modern shoe store right in the city, right in the middle of New York City, and it's all vegan. And they have so many varieties of really fashionable shoes. The thought wouldn't even occur to you when you're shopping there that it's a vegan store. So, you know, not until you've been in the store a little while and then you look up on the wall and you see this subtle writing that says, "Go vegan, thanks." So it's really cool, and I'm going to play a recording of the interview I did with Erica Kaberski, the co-owner, right in the break room of Moo Shoes in New York. I'm in New York City at Moo Shoes with Erica Kaberski. Welcome to Animal Voices, Erica.
Thanks for having me. Welcome to New York.
Yeah, it's very exciting. For those who are not familiar with your store, can you tell us what Moo Shoes is?
Moo Shoes is a all-vegan shoe and accessory store. We opened our doors in 2001, and since then we've moved to our bigger location in the Lower East Side.
And what inspired you to open a vegan shoe store?
I opened it with my sister Sarah. We were just both longtime vegetarians and vegans. We gave up leather in high school, and so it was always just a lot of pressure to have shoes that looked like everyone else's. And we always just dreamed about there being a place that we could go. And so really since high school, we've been talking about opening a place like this.
Great. Okay, now you said you opened the store in 2001. I don't think there were that many vegans back then.
I definitely think the movement has grown, or at least more people are maybe more public about being vegan now.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that when we first opened, we really, we were surprised by how many people came in opening day. And so we were really pleasantly surprised to see how many vegans and vegetarians were living in New York.
Yeah. Were you concerned that, you know, you might not have any customers since there aren't that many vegans?
Oh, yeah, of course. And there have been a fair amount of slow days. But, you know, the great thing about the vegan community is that they're really supportive of one another. So word of mouth has been our best way of getting the word out there. And so we've been lucky enough to not only get support from the vegans living in the New York and the tri-state area, but New York City is luckily a very popular destination for vegetarians and vegans. And people make our store stop on their vegetarian tour of New York. So
that's wonderful. Yes, and vegans and vegetarians from all over the world would just come and... to Mushu's instead of going to see the Statue of Liberty, right?
I think so. I mean, I remember when we went to London before we opened the store, and our big pilgrimage was to Vegetarian Shoes in Brighton. So.
And now you're continuing the tradition. So who shops at your store? What kind of demographic?
Really what we've learned is that there isn't a real demographic. You know, I mean, I would say that most of our customers are probably in the 20 to 50 range would be...
That's a big range.
Yeah, that's I said that.
All women, I'm sure, are majority.
We found that women, we have the equal amount of men and women customers. Women do buy more shoes, but in their defense, there are a lot more women's shoes out there for them to buy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just there are lots of people who want to follow the vegan lifestyle if it's easy enough to do it, you know. So we hope that our store provides some ease into changing over to the vegan lifestyle.
Do you have celebrities that come to your store?
We've definitely had a couple. Yeah. And it's always very exciting because, you know, you're like, oh, I've heard of you and you've heard of me. That's really great.
Excellent. When I tell people about vegan shoes, they immediately think, you know, hemp shoes, some hippie looking shoes. Can you tell us a little bit about the styles of shoes that you sell in this store?
Yeah. We try to sell shoes for everyone. I mean, when we opened our doors, we probably had 20 styles of shoes, and now I would say we have upwards of 200. And so, you know, we sell lots of dress shoes and boots and everything. I personally don't think we have too many quote-unquote hippie shoes, but not that there's anything wrong with those, too. Everyone, I wear those myself, so.
So can people tell by looking at those shoes the difference between vegan shoes and regular leather shoes?
Most often they can't. You know, we happen to be lucky enough to be on a popular street with tourists and just... it's a shopping neighborhood, and people just come into our store because they like what they see. And yeah. We definitely don't hide the fact that we're a vegan store, so if their eyes are at all open, they will soon realize.
Right.
You know, sometimes people will ask a question like, oh, you have all these pamphlets about vegetarianism and you're selling leather shoes, but then we can explain to them.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And so can you tell us why it's bad to wear leather?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, for us, I know I stopped wearing leather for animals, because the idea of wearing animal skin was just really upsetting to me. But I think of the issue, I've learned since opening the store how much greater it goes into that. You know, I think a lot of people will often think that leather is just a byproduct of the meat. But I think what most people don't realize is that leather is the most profitable aspect of the meat industry.
Really? I didn't know that.
So, you know, all these factory farms that people don't want to support by buying most leather shoes, that's where it's coming from.
And the pelt probably can be sold for more money than the meat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because
meat is cheap.
They've made meat very cheap somehow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I did not know that. And besides selling your own shoes, besides selling shoes made by other brands, you also have your own brand. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. We started our own brand about 5 or 6 years ago called No Vacas, which means no cows in Spanish and Portuguese. And we make them all in Portugal. And it was just important to us to offer another brand of shoes that, you know, were ethically made out of materials that we ourselves could source and mm-hmm. just have control over production.
And besides, when you say ethical, besides it being non-leather, I think your shoes are all made in non-sweatshop factories. Why is that important to you?
I think it's important to me. It's also important to our customers. You know, they want... Because obviously if they care so much about non-human animals, they care about humans as well and want to know that their shoes are being made by people who are treated well. Mm-hmm. That's why we visit the factories in Portugal where our shoes are made, and they're made in union factories. And that's why that's important to us, you know, because we want to walk the talk.
That's excellent. And do you find that vegans are overall more concerned with these issues, like human rights issues and environmental issues, and not just animal rights issues?
Yeah, I mean, I know for me personally, you know, I came into it from an animal rights perspective, but learned about all the other aspects of it. And, you know, I'm really, I was so enlightened by, like, mm-hmm. the environmental effects and the human rights effects, mm-hmm. and just so proud of the vegan movement that it encompasses all these things.
Right. And over the past 9 years, how has the selection of vegan shoes and handbags changed?
It's changed so dramatically. When we first opened 9 years ago, we would go to some of the bigger shoe shows, and no one knew what we were talking about when we said vegan shoes. And they would just kind of roll their eyes at us and move on. And then, but now I just can't believe how many shoes we have. I mean, first of all, there's so many strictly vegan manufacturers that have started since we've opened up. And then also so many mainstream companies who now have their vegan line, so they are catering to the vegans.
That's excellent. And these bigger companies actually say vegan
yes.
on their shoes?
Yes, they're proud of the fact that they are vegan. So
I guess it must make a profit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think fortunately that's probably why they're doing it more than. But any way to get more people and more vegan shoes works for me.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Enjoy your time in New York.
I will. I'm going to be eating lots of vegan food.
Oh, definitely.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, and I just want to say about the interview that we played before the PSA that you don't have to be in New York City to check out Moo Shoes. They do send orders to Canada, and you can order all their wonderful shoes online by going to mooshoes.com. On to you, Allison.
So I just have our upcoming events right now. And on Sunday, December the 19th at 12 p.m., there is going to be a vegetarian and vegan baking and cooking class with Narayani. This will be located near Main Street SkyTrain Station in Vancouver. Learn how your choices of foods determines your health and well-being and quality of life. This class will be a vegetarian vegan baking class. There will be cookies to take home as well as lunch with soup and cornbread. The cost is $35, with the meal included. And to register, call 604-646-0134 or email contact@vanyoga.com. You need to register to join this class. On December the 20th to the 22nd, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day, there will be a three-day workshop for kids called Make a Difference, presented by the BCSPCA. This is happening at the BCSPCA South Okanagan Similkameen Branch at 2200 Dartmouth Drive in Penticton, B.C. Do you want to help out animals but don't know where to begin? That's for kids. This three-day workshop presented by the BCSPCA will give you lots of ideas about ways to help animals in your community and around the world. BCSPCA Kids Club members are helping animals all around the province, and you can too. Find out how to avoid common holiday pet hazards and discover ways to help all animals, including wildlife and farm animals, year-round. Get inspired by hearing the stories of some of the animals at the BCSPCA shelter and learn how to improve the life of your own pet, too. At this workshop, you will meet with cats, dogs, and rabbits during your SPCA tour, play fun animal-themed games, create adoption posters for shelter animals, start the new year with your own New Year's resolution bookmark to remind you how one person can make a difference, make cat and small animal toys to take home or give to animals at the shelter, make healthy treats for your pets or share them with the shelter animals, and meet other kids who love animals as much as you do. Registration is $75 for BCSPCA Kids Club members and $90 for non-Kids Club members. You can register in person or at the shelter. All proceeds will benefit the animals in the care of the South Okanagan Similkameen branch of the BCSPCA. For more information, please email Rochelle at rkid@spca.bc.ca. That's R-K-I-D-D at spca.bc.ca. Coming up on Thursday, January the 20th, 2011. I know it's a long way away, but I'm excited about this and wanted to talk about it. From 7 till 9 p.m., there will be an advanced film screening of the film Forks Over Knives, presented by Liberation BC and the Vancouver Public Library at the Vancouver Public Library Main Library at 350 West Georgia Street in Vancouver. The feature film Forks Over Knives examines the profound claim that most, if not all, of the degenerative diseases that afflict us can be controlled or even reversed by rejecting our present menu of animal-based and processed foods. This is a special advanced screening of the film in partnership with the Vancouver Public Library. Forks Over Knives is due out in theaters in March, and the admission is free to this, so mark it on your calendar now. That's January the 20th from 7 till 9 p.m. It starts at 7 p.m. Joanne, have you seen this film yet?
No, I haven't, actually. And
I've been hearing good things about it online a lot.
And it's all health-based, right? You have experts who are doctors talking about their findings and research and how really animal-based foods aren't that great for you.
Right, and when it says that it's in theaters March 2011, does that mean major theaters?
I don't know what it is, but they're releasing it in March. Okay. Hopefully they will get it in the mainstream theaters. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, that would be amazing. And finally, ongoing every Monday, there is a fundraising event for CATCA, Campaigns Against the Cruelty to Animals. It's called Bowl for the Animals. This happens at the Excalibur Bowling Center at 12350 Petullo Place in Surrey near the Scott Road SkyTrain. Have fun bowling and eating veggie food while helping the animals in need. Just get a group of three or more friends and come for a bowling evening or afternoon of fun. The CATCA fundraiser package is $20 per person. It includes two games of bowling, bowling shoes, a veggie burger or a vegan wrap, french fries, and a beverage. Taxes and gratuities included. For this fundraising promotion, you need to be there before 9 p.m., but the hours are from 11 a.m. till midnight. Call 604-580-2600, extension 223, to reserve a lane and ask for Sue Brock. At the reception, you have to say that you are going there for CATCA fundraising to get this special promotional price, and if you're a vegan, please bring your own tennis shoes to wear. If you have an animal or vegetarian-related event coming up that you would like to have announced in the show, please email us the details at Radio Animal Voices or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver.
You're listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show on 102.7 CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. In the news today, the BCSPCA is seeking the public's help in locating the owner of a deceased dog who was stuffed in a suitcase and left behind a dumpster in Vancouver.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's terrible. The female pit bull was found in a black Kika brand suitcase beside a green dumpster in the south lane behind 254 East 12th Avenue between Main and Sophia. Passersby noticed the dog's legs protruding from the suitcase and called authorities. It is tragic to think that someone would just discard a poor animal like this, said Eileen Drever, senior animal protection officer for the BCSPCA. She said SPCA officers are investigating how the dog died. She had raw, bloody marks on her muzzle where it looks like nylon or perhaps wire had been tightly wound around her mouth. Drever said it is likely that the dog, who also had existing scar wounds on her muzzle, was already dead when she was stuffed into the suitcase. And then the update to that that's listed on the website is that the necropsy results have revealed that the dog died of a blunt force trauma while her muzzle was tied shut. Drever said, it is absolutely sickening to think of the terror and pain this dog must have experienced, and we urge anyone who knows something about this case to please come forward with information. So if you sort of recognize that pit bull, or it also looked like she had recently had puppies, so if you know someone
that
in that neighborhood that maybe owned that dog.
You know, the thing is, if that was a human, they would be doing forensics on the body, getting fingerprints and stuff, but unfortunately...
But if it was a pig, they wouldn't think anything about it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Bacon.
Yeah.
And from PETA.com, a dog who was beaten so severely that he now has to wear special goggles to shield his eyes from sunlight has inspired a proposed law in Florida that would make it a domestic violence offense to torment a family member by physically abusing or threatening to harm or kill an animal. The dog, named Little Horatio, which is an alias used to protect the identity of those involved, once belonged to an 81-year-old woman whose son bludgeoned the dog in order to manipulate his mother. Thankfully, both Little Horatio and his former guardian are both safe. Now, in fact, Little Horatio lives with Kath Cornwall, a victim advocate for the Area Agency on Aging of Pinellas Pasco, who urged Florida State Senator Mike Fasano to file the proposed law. The abusive scenario in which Little Horatio and his former guardian were trapped is not uncommon. Tampa Bay Online references a report showing that 71% of women who own animals and who enter shelters for abused women say that their abusers had harmed, killed, or threatened their animals. Studies have shown that up to 40% of victimized women have delayed seeking refuge from their abusers for as long as 2 months because of concerns for their animal companion safety. So hopefully that passes.
Yeah, that is so sad. And it just shows that all violence is connected. You can't just kind of categorize one and say that's more important than the other.
I do have a piece of good news, though. Yay! Oslo Fashion Week in Norway, which will be held this February, has declared a ban on fur. The move was spearheaded by fur-free designer Fam Ervall and the Norwegian animal rights group NOHA, which organized a massive candlelight vigil against fur back in November and gathered signatures from more than 200 designers, models, photographers, and other members of the Norwegian fashion industry who refused to work with fur. It has been a very natural choice for us because we do not want the OFW to appear as an arena in which to promote products based on the treatment of animals as prohibited by animal welfare concerns in several countries, said Paul Vasbotten, the general manager of Oslo Fashion Week.
That is huge.
Yeah.
Fashion Week in Norway. Aren't they like one of the biggest countries that really...
I don't know.
No, they're really big into fur, I think.
Oh. It's cold up there.
Yeah, it's really cold there.
I would think.
Yeah. So it's one of the...
Yeah, I would think so.
That's sort of what the article had said, was that it's really cold there. So for it to come from somewhere where it is really cold is a huge thing.
It's not as much about fashion, maybe, because they do want to keep warm. But, I mean, there's Gore-Tex.
And it is Fashion Week, so for Fashion Week to say no to fur, that's huge.
Absolutely.
Yay!
So, come on, Vancouver. Where's ours?
I know. And Vancouver's not even cold.
Like, I know.
People are out in the rain with their fur, and you're like, that's got to smell really bad.
Yeah.
So, I think we got our next caller on the line. Becky Ginden-Clark is the Research and Information Director of a local animal rights organization, Liberation BC. Recently, Becky put together an information page and leaflet about the little-known leather industry. We're very excited to have her on the show today to share her findings with us. Welcome to Animal Voices, Becky.
Thank you so much for having me. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. For starters, I'm just going to ask you about the assumption that people make all the time about leather, because I'm sure this is what everybody's thinking about when we're talking about leather. And that's wearing leather, you know, it doesn't really hurt animals because the leather is just a byproduct of the meat industry. So the animals are going to be killed for food anyway. Why not just use all the parts and not waste anything? What do you think about this?
Okay, well, so this is a really common assumption, obviously. Like you said, when it comes to leather, we tend to think the skin is pretty much going to be thrown out otherwise because it's worthless, right? And that isn't actually the case at all. First of all, the skin is actually the most economically important byproduct of the meat industry by far. It's actually, it's so important that some people have gone so far as to describe it as a co-product. It tends to make up about 10% of the slaughtered animal's value, but it can be much more depending on the circumstances and the species. So basically, if you're buying leather, most of the time you're not picking up the leftovers from the meat industry. You're actually supporting the meat industry.
That's interesting, because I guess it can't even be called a byproduct anymore, right?
No. And the other issue is that a lot of time leather is made from animals that weren't killed for their meat at all. And in that case, the leather is the product. It's not a byproduct or a co-product. It's the main product. And the meat is the thing that's basically thrown away.
Interesting. Now, it seems that there are lots of information from animal rights organizations about factory farming and meat production and even fur products, but it seems that not a lot of focus has been put on leather. And I would imagine that the leather industry is much larger than, say, the fur industry. And I actually dug into the numbers a little bit, and it's $12.77 billion industry for fur. Do you know what the number is for leather in terms of the dollar amount?
It is $100 billion, I think, today.
Wow.
It was $16 billion in the mid-'80s, and it's $100 billion today. So it's quite a jump.
So when you're talking about fur industry, $12.77 billion compared to $100 billion for leather.
Yeah, it's a big difference.
Yeah, go ahead.
Were you going to ask about why the information isn't out there more, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
So why isn't there? And when you were doing your research, did you have trouble finding information?
I did. I mean, initially, got better at it as time went along. But yeah, there's not as much information out there, and I think part of the reason is that the average person is very likely to be offended by fur, really. They really know about it. They've learned all about the cruelties behind it, and it's not seen very often. Leather has been dismissed as a byproduct, like we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And the average person isn't as concerned about it. There's not as much demand for information out there. Leather is so ubiquitous in our society that I think people forget that it's someone's skin, or they just think, well, it's part of the meat industry anyway. Also, it's people who are already eating meat are a little more sympathetic to furry animals. They forget that cows are animals too, and that they're just as capable of suffering. So
right, and I think as vegans, we're opposing the eating of meat and eggs and dairy. We really should come out more strongly against leather than we have.
Yeah. I agree completely, which is part of why I put this page together. There's just not that much out there.
Yeah, that is... thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people just think that, from what I hear, is, mm-hmm. well, I need good shoes, and I, you know, they need to be leather to be waterproof.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
Often the excuse, and I think it's just because they don't know where to look for shoes. I mean, I have good shoes, and there's not even, you know, really specifically vegan store around here or anything where I can get that from, but I look for it, and I've learned how to read the labels.
Exactly.
But it does involve reading those little labels and symbols on the shoes, which I had to educate myself on. And how is the average person going to do that? They just don't think of it, I think.
Yeah. Right. Now, what are some of the most common animals we get leather from?
Cows, obviously, mm-hmm. including calves. Also commonly made from pigs, sheep, goats, bison.
Mm. Can you tell us a little bit about the calves and the connection to the dairy industry?
When I mentioned calves, there's veal calves,
mm-hmm.
And discarded dairy calves, which of course we get a lot of leather from those because there's a lot of them around. It's very soft, so people like it because generally the softer the leather, the younger the animal was when it was killed. And obviously we've got a lot of it available.
So there must be a lot of demand for soft leather, baby leather.
Yeah, there is. And also, like I said, there's not just demand. We've got a lot of it around, so they create demand by putting it out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the very softest leather of all comes from aborted calves, which is something that I think a lot of people don't know about, and I certainly didn't know about it until I started doing the research.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but I bet if people knew that, they wouldn't want to wear those products, because that just sounds pretty icky in our society, something that's been aborted. Even if it is a meager cow that they don't care about, it's still, you know...
It's pretty disgusting. It comes through when the stockyards keep male and female cattle together, and then when they start slaughtering them all, some of the females are already pregnant. So they can take the calves from that. As long as the calf is between 3 and 9 months old or so, they're not going to worry about having it grow into an adult. It's a fetus, so then they can use it for the skin. And it's really soft, but it's also really brutal.
So you're saying the animal actually is born in the slaughterhouse as their mothers are being.
Yeah, or not even born necessarily. What they do is they kill the cow, they bleed her out, they're cutting her apart, they're taking out all the organs, they take out the fetal calf, and they can use actually this calf for fetal bovine serum, which is used for cell cultures. So as long as the calf is between 3 months and 9 months old, like I said, and cows have the same gestation period we do, it's 9 months. They pull out the fetal calf, and of course the heart needs to be beating for this to work, so the calf has to be alive. They put a needle in between the ribs, directly into the heart. The heart pumps the blood out into a vacuum bag, and then they're done with the fetus. As far as that goes, they kill the fetus, and then we have this skin left over.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I suddenly have no appetite.
And that's rare for Allison.
Oh, thanks a lot.
You talk about food all the time.
Yeah.
That is crazy. And so if we're buying soft leather, this is what we're contributing to.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's all part of the same industry.
Right. Besides cows and pigs and sheep, what other animals do we get leather from?
Beside the ones you mentioned before, ostriches are getting big, kangaroos, reptiles like alligators, snakes, lizards. There's also some really surprising ones like zebras, dolphins, sharks, stingrays. And a lot of these animals, of course, are raised or hunted specifically for their skins.
What is dolphin skin used for? I've never heard of that before.
I honestly couldn't tell you exactly what it's used for.
That's
I know.
I know seal skin. I know our government likes to use seal skin on clothing.
But yay, Canadian government.
I suspect maybe it's similar to the shark skin and that's very tough, but I don't know specifically what it's used for. And this is also a situation where the skin is worth way more than the meat, or the meat isn't used at all. Like ostrich, for example, the skin is worth like 80% of the value of the animal, and the meat is 20%. So,
and can you tell us a little bit about the slaughter of ostriches?
Ostriches specifically, I know that they can take hours to kill, for example, because you've seen them. They're huge, powerful, powerful birds. There was an investigator with the Fund for Animals in California talking to a farm there, and the farmer explained to the investigator that it had taken him 2 hours of violent struggle to kill one ostrich.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that's 2 hours this bird is going through. It's just brutal.
2 hours for one
animal. Is it worth it?
Yeah.
I guess
yeah.
it is.
I
oh
guess.
Oh, God.
There's also with lizards and snakes that they to process them. It's another animal where they just skin them alive because they feel that there's a belief that it'll make the skin more supple. Snakes sometimes they'll just nail one to a tree while it's still alive, and then they can peel the skin off, and then the snake just dies there, hanging from the tree without its skin.
Oh my
That's
God.
Just disgusting.
So yeah, it is.
So this is not any better than any of the worst fur footage we've ever seen. This is actually worse.
Yeah, no, absolutely. When I was looking through pictures and videos, it's exactly the same. It's just as disgusting. And you can see the animals struggling, and it's, ugh.
Ugh. Well, let's say, you know, I'm someone who doesn't really care about cows, but I love kangaroos or dolphins or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I would I'd rather go barefoot than wear, like, say, kangaroo leather. Is there an easy way for consumers to tell what animals their shoes or handbags are made of?
No, there's not an easy way. Most leather labels really only reveal where the leather was finished, not where it came from or even what animal it came from. Sometimes they can use intentionally deceptive labels. Kangaroo, like you specifically mentioned, it's being used more and more often because it's supposed to be, it's considered stronger and lighter than the conventional leathers. But it isn't always labeled as such because a lot of people are really concerned about, there was an international outcry about it. I think Adidas was making kangaroo skin sneakers, and people were very upset about it. So they're not always labeling these things. Sometimes pig leather is used frequently, but it isn't glamorous, so they don't label it as pig leather.
Isn't that what's called suede?
Suede is a different I think suede is, because you can actually process the pig skin into a leather that seems very similar to cow leather. I think suede is a different process. I'm not really up on the different types. So suede, I believe, is made from pig, but I'm not totally sure of all the processes of how the leather is. There's a ton of it. There's also, like, they use brains and stuff to process it. So I don't know all the stuff. The other thing where the labeling issue comes up is, of course, with bringing up the fur thing, is with domestic cats and dogs. Everybody heard about how they were skinning cats and dogs alive in China and Thailand, et cetera. There's a booming leather industry there, and of course they're using cats and dogs. But of course they know that people over here find that offensive, so they label them something else entirely different, or they don't label them at all. And it's imported, it's legal to import it into Canada, just like the fur. It's just labeled under different names, and we get a lot of our leather from China. So it's really tricky to know what kind of leather you're getting.
Right. And I've heard people get really upset with people walking their dogs with fur trim on. They should be equally upset with people walking their dogs with leather shoes on, because it could be made of dogs.
Yeah, it absolutely could. I don't know. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is just so eye-opening.
Yeah, we just forget about it because it's everywhere.
Well, everything you've been saying, Becky, is eye-opening because, you know, you don't think about, I haven't really thought about snake and lizards and certainly not dolphins and sharks and that. It's really grotesque and gruesome, and you've really opened, you know, I'm pretty educated myself, but I didn't know about that stuff. Wow, you really learned a lot.
Yeah, because leather, nobody talks about leather, and that's the problem, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, for listeners who have seen the documentary Earthlings, and I think that's most vegans learn about leather from that documentary, you'll remember that there's a really gruesome segment on Indian leather, and most people are shocked by this because we think that cows are sacred in India, so how come there's an industry selling cow skins?
Well, it's actually because cows are so sacred to some people in India that the industry is so brutal in a way. Because slaughtering cows is illegal there in certain states, certain jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they march them into other states or jurisdictions where it is legal to kill them. But sometimes that means walking hundreds and hundreds of miles. So what they do is they tie the cattle together. They have rings through their noses, and they march and they march and they march. And when the cows start to slow down or pass out because they've been walking for miles, and a lot of the time they don't have food or water, because remember, the point here is skinning the skin. It's not the meat. A lot of the time when they get to the end of this, they don't have enough meat even to use. It's really the skin is the commodity here. So when they stop because they're tired or they start to collapse, the workers will rub pepper into their eyes, tobacco into their eyes. They'll twist and break their tails, anything to make them keep moving. And then they're crammed into these overcrowded transport trucks to be taken to the slaughterhouse after all this. And this has been, like the kangaroo leather, it's been a big issue internationally. Several major retailers like The Gap, Liz Claiborne, there's been a few others, I think, they've stopped selling Indian leather as a result of these investigations. But the industry is still going, and the cruelty hasn't stopped, and a lot of the leather still comes into Canada and the U.S., so...
Wow.
It's still something you don't necessarily know what you're getting.
Right. Now, I wish this interview was longer, but we only have about 3 minutes left. So I want you to touch on the harm to the environment, leather's environmental impact.
Sure. I guess a lot of people think that it's biodegradable. It's skin, so it's biodegradable. But the truth is that, yes, skin is biodegradable, but it would also just rot away on your feet or in your closet. So they have to treat it with a whole bunch of toxins and chemicals, basically to turn the skin into leather. Most leather is chrome tanned, even though several studies have established a link between chromium and lung cancers and sinus cancers. Mm. A few other toxins they use, formaldehyde, coal tar derivatives, a bunch of oils, dyes, finishes, which are cyanide-based. People who live in these areas around tanneries are much more likely to get cancers. In Kentucky, the people in that area were 5 times more likely to get leukemia. In Sweden and Italy, they did a study showing the cancer risk was 20 to 50% higher than they anticipated for people living near tanneries. The tanneries, I know we're in a hurry here, but the tanneries also release huge amounts of proteins, hairs, lime sludge, sulfides, acids. They use 15,000 gallons of water per every ton of skin they produce. Mm. Yeah, and it's just, it's, and also you have to think about that the animal agriculture industry, meat, eggs, dairy, et cetera, it's a leading cause of global warming and environmental destruction, and the leather industry is all part of that same package.
Right. Now, just quickly, though, in Canada, we don't do a lot of the tanning. Is it because of the environmental impacts? We can't really do it legally here?
I don't know exactly. The Canadian leather industry is severely on the decline.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we send most of our stuff to China and other places to have it tanned, but I don't know exactly why we don't do it here. There just isn't much of a market for Canadian leather, period.
Right. We don't really care if they get cancer in China as long as we keep it away from here, right? Well, okay, so I think, thank you so much. I wish we had more time, but thank you so much for joining us and sharing this important information.
It's been extremely enlightening.
It has.
Yeah, and I'm going to check out that pamphlet. We can find it on liberationbc.org, is that right?
Yeah, you can actually look at our website. It's liberationbc.org/issues/leather, and that'll take you to all the information, a bunch of stuff I didn't even mention. So,
thank you so much, Becky.
For sure. Thank you for having me on.
Take care. As she said, for more information about Becky's research on leather industry, please visit liberationbc.org/issues/leather.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Next week, we will have cookbook author, podcaster, and animal activist Colleen Patrick-Goudreau on the show. She'll be talking to us about her new cookbook, Color Me Vegan, which I've been reading lately. It's really, really interesting. And as well as holiday cooking and being vegan in a non-vegan world during the holidays.
I'm a big fan of hers. Thank you for getting her
on. She is amazing. So I am looking forward to that. We here at the Animal Voices show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up for our Facebook page or on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, where our shows can be downloaded from. If you support the work that we do here every week at the Animal Voices show to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, please show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio, because we do rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. To make a donation of $5, $10, $20, or whatever you can afford, simply go to coopradio.org and click on Donate Now. And remember to indicate on your donation that it's going towards Animal Voices. So it's getting to be the end of the year, and just to let you know, these donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support. Please tune in again next week, and we're going to leave you with a song that's off a BCSPCA benefit compilation. It's called Reindeer Touchdown by Lindsay May.
Have a good weekend.
Mama's in the kitchen doing the baking, making the house smell like cinnamon and raisin, starting to think I'll never fall asleep tonight. Chopping the firewood so we can roast chestnuts with kids from the neighborhood. I'm betting my brother that I can roast more than him. And I'm getting so very excited. Mama says, children, can hear scratching and a whimper that's so cute. Maybe this will be my lucky year yet. And I'm getting so very excited. Then Mama says, "June."